Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's politics podcast. The Conservatives have had a catastrophic election with Theresa May losing her party's majority. She now looks 8 seats short of an overall majority, with her own future in doubt. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So, James, you've spoken to senior Conservatives already. What is their mood, and what do they think will have to happen next?
Their mood is fury and shock. Fury at how a majority has gone, an election that the Tories thought they would win in a landslide, has ended up in a hung parliament, and shock at the result. No one saw this coming. You know, the word coming out of CCHQ in the last few days was, oh, the majority will be 70 or 80. Today at about about 5 o'clock, I picked up on some Tory jitters. But this was more jitters about a lower than expected majority with fewer gains than people were expecting. Not this bad a result. This is a catastrophic result for the Tory party, and it is a personally devastating result for Theresa May. She ran this election as a presidential campaign. Do you want her or Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister? And the public said, we're not sure. And that is a cutting indictment.
So, Katie, Theresa May is going to give a speech later on. I imagine she will consider resigning, as David Cameron did straight after the EU referendum result. I imagine also there are other Conservatives who will ask her to stay on and provide, I mean, already she's been referred to by some as an interim leader. Do you think that it's a question of when rather than whether she resigns? And what do you think the Conservatives will do now? Do you think they'll start looking at Boris Johnson, Amber Rudd, David Davis?
Well, I think we saw in her count speech, Maidenhead, she referred to a period of stability, which is obviously slightly ironic given that she was the one who chose to create a period of instability.
Well, she's plunged her party
into
this most incredible instability. Anyway.
But I think the reason her saying this suggests that she thinks that she should stay on at least for some time, just to make sure that it was a coherent transfer period. Mm-hmm. But already we saw Anna Soubry appear on the BBC. Mm-hmm. She's not May's biggest fan, and we know that, but she was quite quick to say it's been an awful campaign and to suggest that May really needs to consider her position. And once one MP is out, it's only a matter of time till the rest follow.
Now, James, we heard Boris Johnson, when he was re-elected, he gave a rather statesman-like speech, almost as if he was pitching for the job. There have been reports that Boris has been sounding out other Tory MPs to see if they would be open to his leadership. Do you think Boris is on manoeuvres?
Well, having spoken to several cabinet ministers in the last few hours, there is no cabinet consensus on what should happen to Theresa May. Some people take the view that in the national interest, with the Brexit talks due to start so soon, they just have to let her carry on. They say that they will insist on a completely different style of government from her, genuine collective decision making, but they feel that they can't jettison her at this moment. Other members of the cabinet feel very strongly that she went to the country seeking a majority and a mandate and she got neither, and therefore her position for anything other than a couple of months is untenable. I think one of the crucial questions is this, is can some kind of unity ticket in the party emerge? And that would have to involve a Remainer and a Leaver. The obvious combination on that front is Amber Rudd and Boris Johnson. Amber Rudd just held on her own seat. But, you know, it isn't clear that they will be able to come to an arrangement. But there will be something like that. Will be what is needed, because I don't think the Tory party will want a particularly long contest at the moment. I mean, that would look absurd. I think one of the other things to note is one worry that Tory cabinet ministers have about May is that she's just inherently unsuited to the kind of bartering that is going to be needed to get stuff through in a parliament in which she has no majority and is going to be reliant on the DUP in every single vote.
Now, Katie, this has been an incredible night for the Labour Party. It looks as if Jeremy Corbyn is going to take his party's vote share from 30% to 40%, a 10-point increase, the most any Labour Party leader will have done since Attlee in 1945. Now, a lot of Jeremy Corbyn's internal critics in the Labour Party, all of whom thought that he was absolutely toxic politically, will this morning have to wake up to the fact that Corbyn and his supporters might have had more of a point than they thought, and that Corbyn himself came within a couple of percentage points of taking Downing Street. So surely this puts the Labour leadership question to rest for a while.
Yeah, definitely. And also, everyone kept talking about the popular vote and how if Corbyn increased the popular vote enough, he could stay on, even if they lost seats as a result. But lots of MPs who were pretty convinced they were going to lose their seats, particularly in like Northern Highlands, have kept them. So he looks even stronger than many had expected. I think I saw a few people saying, oh, well, imagine, you know, if they did this with Jeremy Corbyn, imagine what they could have done with a more centrist candidate. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think that washes too much for people, because what Corbyn appears to have been able to do is galvanise the youth vote. If you look at the votes so far, a lot of those seem to be coming from voter turnout and getting young voters out there, which is something we always hear about. It's something particularly Labour politicians always talk about doing, but something they don't actually manage to achieve much.
So it might be young voters, Katie, who have delivered this bloody nose to Theresa May.
Yeah, definitely. And we saw yesterday, obviously, people put up photos, you know, and it's not very clear if it's definite, but, you know, being like, there's lots of young people at this polling station. But if you look at the swings, they do seem to come in some areas from voters that aren't down already. And that does appear to be like the youth vote.
Now, James, the Brexit negotiations start in 10 days. If Theresa May is a person who walks into that debating room, she probably won't be the person who concludes these Brexit talks. She asked for a mandate to strengthen her hand over Brexit. It weakened her hand dramatically. Now, do you think that Brexit itself is now in doubt? And what would you say the effect of this loss of the Conservatives' majority will be on Brexit generally? I mean, it's being said that voters have rejected a hard Brexit, the argument being that Theresa May wanted out of the customs union, she wanted to end free movement, that she wanted to pull out of a single market, that voters have rejected that kind of Brexit, and that she might have to negotiate a softer kind. So do you think that that is now in question, or do you think that Brexit, as you wrote in the magazine, wasn't a factor in this campaign, so ought not to be affected by its result?
Well, I think Brexit will be affected by the result in this way, not in the way that Britain is not going to leave the European Union. But I think the length of any transition period is now probably longer. I think there will be more discussion over staying in certain things than there would have been before. But I think it is worth noting this, that Theresa May is now in this very, very odd position where one of the reasons she wanted this majority was to free her of the people who, had those close to her, saw as the kind of Brexit headbangers on both the Leave and Remain wings of the Tory party. She's now in a position where she needs to carry all of them with her in every key House of Commons vote on Brexit.
So, Katie, the one bright spot for the Conservatives is Scotland, where the Conservatives have performed extraordinarily well. They've managed to unseat Alex Salmond, the former First Minister, unseat Angus Robertson, the SNP leader in Westminster. Ruth Davidson seems to be having a good campaign. Oddly, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it seems that the Scottish Conservatives have bailed out the English Conservatives. If it hadn't been for those 13 Scottish gains, Theresa May would be in even worse trouble. So what is happening north of the border?
Yeah, it's incredible, like you say, the fact that in Scotland it's the Conservatives that are propping up the Conservatives in England, which you would never have thought possible. They've just had a much more positive campaign, but there it's been all about the independence referendum. So we've seen the unionist vote all round being very strong.
And the SNP have lost something like 20 seats. I think Labour, they're back in...
They've lost 22 seats and they think it might go up to 23.
So does this then mean that the independence referendum, the second referendum, has now been put off the agenda, but this is enough to put the SNP into reverse? And no matter what happens in Westminster, the SNP won't be staging a second plebiscite.
Well, I think the fact that all the unionist parties have taken the seats from the SNP, so Labour, Lib Dem and Tory, means that it's quite clear this is an anti-independence vote. That it's not to do with one party specifically. Obviously, Ruth Davidson done a great job getting the Conservative message out, hence why they have had bigger gains. But it does mean that Nicola Sturgeon is in a very tricky place with IndyRef 2. And I think, to be honest, the SNP themselves, if they had known Theresa May was going to call this early election, would have played the whole independence hand differently.
Now, James, we saw UKIP and the Liberal Democrats do pretty badly. Paul Nuttall didn't even come close to taking a seat for himself. His party has pretty much died a death. So we've seen the deterioration of smaller parties in this campaign. And I guess we can say, well, isn't that great? Britain has crushed populism. But then again, we've seen effectively a left-wing populist takeover of the Labour Party, which has proved incredibly popular. So it seems that Labour has been the only real beneficiary of the votes which have left the Greens, UKIP to a far larger extent than we thought, and the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah, Jeremy Corbyn ran essentially as a kind of left unity candidate, and it worked. I think one thing that is causing real fury in Tory circles is the fact that it looks like Labour gained more among the over 65s than the Conservatives did. And Tories are complaining that they unilaterally disarmed in this election, that Labour promised their base, their youth vote, free tuition at universities. The Tories menaced their base, their pensioner base, with their social care policy, the so-called dementia tax, and by saying they take the winter fuel allowance away from all but the poorest pensioners. And I think this does sum up the complete and utter ineptitude of the Tory campaign. You know, we are already getting a massive briefing war between allies of Theresa May and allies of Lyndon Crosby over who is to blame for what went wrong in this campaign. But I think there is another question here, which is one of the things that is creating such shock among Tory MPs is how close Jeremy Corbyn came to Downing Street, how close someone who admires the state of Venezuela came to becoming Prime Minister. And I think this is the thing. Tory MPs don't want a second election from the ones I've spoken to. Instead, they take the view that they should play this Parliament long. Because I think they fear that the momentum is currently with Labour. And that if there was another election, Jeremy Corbyn would be able to find even more disaffected voters, even more young voters who don't normally turn out, to come and turn out and try and kick the Tories out. So I think we will see them try and play this Parliament long, which means that we are going to be in for some of the tightest parliamentary arithmetic we've seen in Westminster in years. You know, John Major tried a while with no effective majority, but it was actually a relatively short period of time. This is going to be potentially several years of trying to govern with no majority, because Tory MPs think that going back in the autumn, the ones I've spoken to, but the result would be worse.
Now, Katie, thanks to the Scottish Conservatives, the Tories plus the DUP will be more or less able to have a majority. But I imagine it's going to be back to the kind of politics we had in the mid-90s, you know, when the DUP were voting with the Tories, that John Major would be taunted, look, how much did that vote cost you? The implication being that the Tories have to basically bribe the DUP and send lots of money to Northern Ireland for their parliamentary support. So I imagine that negotiation process will have to start pretty quickly. I also imagine that a lot of the things Theresa May had spoken about, grammar schools, for example, abolishing the winter fuel payment for people on low incomes, a lot of those things simply aren't going to happen now because she couldn't get them through Parliament.
Yeah, I think her manifesto is in part in tatters, to be honest. Lots of those things were quite unpopular, hence why they've done so badly. Yeah. It wasn't a feel-good manifesto. It had some quite difficult things in it. It had lots of, you know, taking away benefits and not giving many. Grammar schools, we know her party doesn't like to begin with. I can't see them. I can't even see, you know, more than half her party really going for grammar schools if it came down to it. So I don't think the Tory manifesto is really that representative of what we're going to see in the next few years.
So James, then no matter what happens with the coalition negotiations, is it safe to say that the British voters have just brought a complete halt to the Theresa May agenda?
Yes, the Theresa May modernisation project of the Conservative Party ended when that exit poll came through. I think in a way it ended when the dementia tax U-turn occurred. And I think that you will see Theresa May kept on a remarkably short leash by her party. I don't think they will be inclined to indulge her in any kind of bold exercises. So I think we wait to see that. But I think one of the other things we wait to see is how does the Labour Party react? There are lots of Labour MPs who are almost as horrified as Conservative MPs are by the prospect, the idea of Jeremy Corbyn being Prime Minister. This is now a much more real prospect. And there is a question about what do they do? You know, do all these people who quit the front bench or refuse to serve in the first place, do they feel the need to return to it now that Labour is so much closer to power? I think one of the things worth noting about Jeremy Corbyn is that lots of people, including myself, we can afford he was falling between two stools on Brexit. He was neither appealing to Leave voters nor Remain voters. It actually turns out he wasn't falling between two stools, he was straddling them. And what is very clever is Labour managed to hold on in Brexit, strongly Brexit voting areas, because it wasn't opposed to Brexit. Yet it was still able in Remain voting areas to capitalise on that discontent with the decision taken in the referendum last year.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. Now do stay tuned to the Coffee House at the Spectator's blog for the latest developments in what looks like yet another avalanche of political news.